It's many a young person's fantasy to run away and join the circus. But when a 61-year-old man does it to become a trapeze artist, most would say it's time for a saliva test. That's what you might think Sam Keen is in need of. Truth is, he is crazy like a fox. After graduating from Harvard Divinity School, writing 12 books, including the best-selling Fire in the Belly, and serving as consulting editor of Psychology Today for many years, Sam spent over 5 years of his life learning to fly on the flying trapeze, and not all of the time with the greatest of ease. The lessons he learned show how trapeze can be a metaphor for life and how beginner's mind is a healthy thing to have at any age. The memoir of his experience is Learning to Fly, Trapeze, Reflections on Fear, Trust, and the Joy of Letting Go. Sam is our guest today to talk about the book, The Magic of Trapeze and Life. Sam, just a joy to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
An easy read. It certainly is.
Well, the book is really sort of functions on two levels. One way is just as a story and an account of something that people have seen but know very little about, this whole world of circus and of trapeze and of what goes into it. And I've collected all the lore of it along the way of becoming myself a trapeze flyer and a catcher. And then the other part really is, it runs quite parallel, is a book about the art of living, and it applies to anybody's experience who's trying to live in a way that is conscious and intricate and vital.
And the two notions really mesh well. Very, very well done.
They do, really. Yeah. The first piece of literature in this genre was that great little tiny book, Zen and the Art of Archery. And so they just take this traditional thing of archery and say how archery becomes a way of understanding your consciousness and learning how to, when to hold on and when to let go. And so I've just taken a more intricate kind of activity, one which involves danger and involves all of the different kinds, and involves community, and applied that really, as it were, to the life of the spirit.
Oh, I definitely want to get into that one, that's for sure, as we try and create a literary community in the place where you're sitting. But let's go to the very beginning. Did your wife and friends think you were sniffing glue or something when you decided at 61 to take up trapeze?
Well, my wife didn't. She's seen me do things like this before, and my close friends didn't. But I think that probably people on the edge of the trapeze world did. I at one time practiced with the flying cranes, the greatest act in the world. And of course, I wasn't doing any kind of elaborate tricks, but I would come back to the board and they would ask me in their sort of stilted Russian English, and how old are you? So everybody sort of thought, well, I would last a few months at it. But when it went year after year after year, they began to say, well, you know, I don't know. He's just going to do what he's going to do.
Yeah. What was the first inspiration to do it?
First inspiration really was when I was a kid, my dad took me to the circus and I saw a flying trapeze act. And that moment when the flyer left the trapeze and stretched out his arms and going over to the catcher, that became sort of fixated in my imagination. And it stayed there an entire lifetime. So much so that if people would ask me, like at a cocktail party or something, you know, well, imagine an entirely different life for yourself, where you're not a philosopher, you're not that, what would it be? And I would say, oh, flying trapeze artist. And, you know, of course, it was just a wise-ass answer. And then
was it?
What? It sure was.
And didn't Freud talk about where jokes come from, huh?
Look out. Watch what you imagine and watch what you think is just a fantasy, because it may reemerge later in life, as it did for me when I saw a little television piece about San Francisco School of Circus Arts having a program to teach normal people, as it were, trapeze. And I went down there and I was hooked. Within 2 weeks, I was coming back all the time, and just one thing led to another.
Including the construction of one in your living room.
My living room? Oh, that was early on. You know, I feel a little bit like trapeze, like the guy who Frank Sinatra said, heard that he was drinking a quart of liquor a day, and Frank Sinatra said, you got to be careful, that's the way I got started.
Yeah, right. Well, you say in the book, and here we get in, I guess, to more of the metaphysical or philosophical aspect of it, that we're still a culture that values intellect over the body's grace.
Right. That we... In many ways, I mean, take for instance, even just our spiritual disciplines, to go to that level, We don't have bodily disciplines connected with church and with religion, whereas the Eastern religion always did. It had kung fu and had tai chi and all of those, and in India they had the erotic arts. That sexuality and religion were always intertwined. The notion that the body and the spirit are inseparable, and so to cultivate one is to cultivate the other. And you know, the best that we have is what I call sort of Episcopalian or Catholic calisthenics of getting up and kneeling down, getting up and kneeling down. So, in a way, my insistence upon trying to create a bodily sense of grace is traditional in other religious traditions, but not in the West.
Finger pointing doesn't count.
Doesn't count. Finger pointing, that's right.
Trapeze has an ability to act as a mirror for our deepest and sometimes repressed fears. As you found out, assisting a young woman up to the top of the ladder, and some very interesting things happened to her.
Yeah, well, this was a fairly extreme case, but a woman who had come to a 5-day seminar and left after the first day, came back after the third day, and said that it took her probably 45 minutes to climb the ladder with me behind her. And at each point she would go up there, she would talk about other fears. And near the top, she talked about, well, I'm afraid you'll leave me alone and abandon me because my father left when I was 12 years old. And she got to the top, near the top, and she just utterly panicked, went into an almost psychotic state of disassociation. Finally brought her down, and the next morning she came and told me that night she had dreamt about her, and for the first time recalled this incident of her father sexually abusing her, and that that had been what a lot of the fear. So we got her up that day, and she went off the trapeze, and there was a real breakthrough in terms of her repression of all of these memories and of the fear that went with them.
And imagine so much energy that is liberated for creative acts, because I've seen that myself through not something that intense, but through body work. When you give up that energy of holding on to something or repressing something, you have a lot more energy to work with.
Exactly. And everybody has fear. It's a question of how they deal with it. Some people deny their fear so much it just goes into kind of vague anxieties. Other people will put it into a phobia, so that the fearfulness of life becomes the fearfulness of spiders or wide open spaces. Or some people decide that they're going to just try to conquer fear. And others just say, look, I'm going to avoid fear. I'm never going to do anything that's fearful or risky. And so they just begin to live in smaller and smaller boxes. They have, you know, what I would call sclerosis of the soul. And they're dead long before they're buried. And so trapeze is one way. And, you know, I struck on this many years ago when I started the inward bound part of outward bound experience, because we found that how a person handled the fear and the challenge of climbing a cliff was exactly how they handled things like that in their ordinary life.
Yeah, there are a lot of different notions I could get into on that, but let me follow up the fear. You call yourself, and there's a chapter in the book, connoisseur of fear.
A connoisseur of fear, yeah, because first of all, life is fearful, and to deny that is also to deny to live with a sense that that life is just ordinary. And the other side of experiencing the fearfulness of life is experiencing the wonder of life, the marvelous. You know how many people, a kind of sad story you hear, that it's not until they get cancer or something they realize, oh, it's so precious. Every day is precious, because they haven't lived on the edge. They haven't lived on the edge of their own risk. So on the trapeze, one of the major things we try to do, we don't try to get people over their fears. We say, you know, what are you afraid of? And when is it realistic? What risks are good risks to take, and what risks are bad risks to take? And so there, you have to separate out the promising risks and the unpromising risks, and then just work with your fear to see when it is that you should make a move and when you shouldn't.
We're talking with Sam Keen. He's the author of Learning to Fly, Trapeze, Reflections on Fear, Trust, and the Joy of Letting Go. I'm Paul Nelson. Following up fear, there's something deeper than the fear of falling, the fear of heights, that kind of thing. There's a meta-fear, which the existentialists called ontological anxiety, the fear of being nothing or nothingness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, underneath the fear of getting hurt, the fear of death, and underneath the fear of death, the fear of nothingness, or if you've been raised in certain traditions, the fear of hell, which is even worse. And I remember the day that I sort of confronted this raw. I'd had a lot of fears and things, and one day I went out there and I was doing something I shouldn't have been doing. I was practicing totally by myself, and I made a move. I was going to fall to the net face first and turn, and I couldn't make myself do it, and so I just flipped back over on the bar, but I'd been upside down too long, and so I fainted, and I fell, and I just died. I mean, the next thing I know, I don't know where I am. I don't know where I've been. And it took me for a while before I saw the trapeze up there swinging back and forth to realize, oh, I'm on the net and I'm not really injured. But then I realized that, oh, this kind of fear of nothingness has been with me all of my life. And to face it directly is to have to begin to get some kind of existential courage. If you don't do that, then you just go on and you repress it and it comes out in some other form.
It's almost as if there was neural chaos and a chaotic event in your life. And you know, another theme that I think of right away is the notion of Zen, how this is all nothingness and this is an illusion. And you experience for that for a second. Boy, the ego's got to just die when that happens.
Well, that's right, because I think that the fear of nothingness is first of all a judgment about what happens after death. Of course, the reality, we don't know. We have no idea. But we hold on. And the tighter we hold on, the more we try to control life, and then it doesn't flow through us. And that experience of letting go then is an experience that, well, let life flow through you. And you'll experience fear, you'll experience joy, you'll experience everything, but you'll experience more.
Well, the book is amazingly poetic, and I'd like to get folks a chance to experience that. On page 43, I've outlined a paragraph or so that we can read and perhaps chat about afterwards. So if you'd be so kind to read from Learning to Fly, we're talking with Sam Keen.
Each time I triumph over a minor fear, I get a shot of pure vitality straight into the center of my being. For several days after I lost my fear of smashing into the board, I felt a quiet joy in my loins, not unlike the afterglow that remains after lovemaking. There was a new imprint, a bit of carnal knowledge, a muscular memory lodged in my viscera. This new knowledge was not mental, and it did not reside in my imagination. I still could not visualize what I had learned, but I could feel it in my midsection. It was a form of tacit knowledge, blind but powerful. A body wisdom my mind could not fully comprehend. Now the tyranny of the negative feedback loop was broken. The energy that had been tied up in fear was liberated, and I could get more into the swing of things. Let me just explain what was happening. When I first tried to learn to swing, just swinging on the trapeze, building up a swing is a very intricate thing. It looks very simple, but it's very complex. And if you don't kick forward back at the right time, you come back and you smash your legs or your rear end against the board. For probably 4 months, my rear end looked, as my wife said, like I'd been caned in Singapore. I just kept smashing into those things. I couldn't get it. And so I would go up there and this negative feedback loop built up. I would be so afraid that something was going to happen that it did happen. And then one day I went out there and I got this strange idea. I said, look, maybe if I closed my eyes and swung so that I was just paying total attention to my own body rhythms, maybe it would change things. And it did. And I swung back there and I didn't hit my rear end. And I tried it again and I didn't hit my rear end. And then so gradually that whole afternoon, then this negative feedback loop began to break, and this very positive thing, this kind of pleasure of the swing, went into my body. And it wasn't in my head, because the next day I went out there and it just the visceral or the kinesthetic sense of the movement and the pleasure of the movement just carried me through.
And you became a better dancer.
That's right. Yes. I mean, one day I took my wife out. We were in this black tie thing, and I've not been a great dancer. And I was dancing away, and she said, when did you learn to dance this way? Because I was moving out of the center of my body, which you have to in trapeze, rather than, you know, my arms and legs, which uh-huh. most men sort of dance on the periphery of their being.
Uh-huh. I would have probably said something smart-ass like, honey, I spit out the gum, you know, something like that. One other thought about that notion of kinesthetic intelligence. Howard Gardner, years ago, at your alma mater, Harvard, right? Mm-hmm. He wrote a book called... multiple intelligence.
Yes, different modes of knowing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he had eight at the time and has since added to them, including spiritual intelligence. But when you talk about that body's intelligence, that kinesthetic intelligence, the folks who come totally from the mind, from the intellect, have this fear that maybe the way they've operated all their life may not be the be-all, the end-all, and they're right.
Exactly. There's a kind of... first place, there's a kind of intelligence that you see, especially in circus performers or somebody like Michael Jordan. I mean, you just see this enormously educated body and neural system, and there's a kind of grace that we don't honor that much unless it's in professional ball players or something. And I very much believe that the cultivation of that is a very important part of the art of living, so that we don't just live in our heads. Nietzsche once said that the sedentary life is a sin against the Holy Spirit, and we're becoming more and more a sedentary culture. We're our ideal is just to sit in front of a screen pretty soon on the internet and do nothing real.
Yeah,
have virtual lives.
Yeah, exactly, and that brings up another beautiful quote, which I marked, and it's later in the book. And, talk about that sedentary lifestyle. Not only are we not moving, not only are we doing that disservice to the soul, but we're watching TV and taking in those ads. And you called, you have this quote, advertising the pornography of the market economy. That was just beautiful. I underlined that one. Yeah. So we're doing a double disservice when we're sitting on the couch watching TV. A trapeze became like prayer or meditation to you say in the book. Tell us about that.
Well, it became a way that I could look at my own fear, my own courage. But I think more than that, it became an abiding source of joy and levity for me. I've been a kind of heavy dude in many ways. I'm educated in philosophy and theology, and I was a writer, and I was a Calvinist, a Presbyterian, and dealt with really heavy themes. Well, I have to say, I dealt with them well, but at some period in my life, I felt a little bit like Samuel Johnson, who said, I kept trying to be a philosopher, but cheerfulness kept breaking through. And there was something about this that just swept me away, which injected this sense of just the joy of being into the center of my being. It's not in my head. I mean, I had a lot of joy in my head. And as a philosopher, I think I was a very joyful philosopher. My mind gave me immense pleasure. But there was a way in which there was a disconnection and in which I did not have that just sense of the joy of being that as I walked through my life. And trapeze gave me a lot of that.
Yeah.
Or gave it back to me, I guess. I had it as a child.
Right. We all do, don't we?
We all do. Yeah, we absolutely do.
Yeah. But in this society, we see and for the most part, honor with billions of dollars the artificial separation between mind and body. And you were reuniting and becoming whole in a sense. Is that accurate?
Well, that's right. That's right. And doing it as a practice, too. Doing it as a practice of... Because I believe that so much of the literature about spirituality and things is still a literature sort of about sitting still or meditating or trying to feel some kind of sort of fey and groovy emotions rather than to try to live in an entirely different way, in a way which, it's such an anomaly that it was the Christian tradition that said, and the spirit became flesh, the word became flesh, and yet we've been very, very suspicious of the flesh, both in terms of sexuality and in terms of other forms of bodily expression. So, you go to Africa, you go anywhere else. I've just come back from Bhutan, and religion is danced. Arthur Darby Nock used to always say that pre-modern religion wasn't believed, it was danced. And the only place we find that here is in black churches. And so this is a movement of that back into something that involves moving.
But you can't control that.
You sure can't control it. You can't control it. And that's one of the lovely things about trapeze is the kind of dialogue between control and letting go. Yeah, you do have to practice. You do have to exert all of your will to learn certain kinds of skills and capacities, but then there comes a time when you got to let go. You got to take a leap of faith, and you just say, well, it's time to try it.
Well, yours is a leap of faith like few others, and it's amazing. The book is Learning to Fly, Trapeze, Reflections on Fear, Trust, and the Joy of Letting Go. If you'd like more information on trapeze, you can write one place is the Sonoma Trapeze Troupe, 16331 Norbum Road, that's N-O-R-R-B-U-M Road, Sonoma, California, 95476.
Can't keep my eyes from the circling sky.